Hello, and welcome to the Screaming Into the Mic podcast, a medium normalizing the expression of women's anger. Soraya Chimali writes, "Gendered ideas about anger make us women question ourselves, doubt our feelings, set aside our needs, and renounce our own capacity for moral conviction. This podcast is where I take a stand and say no more through creating a safe space for women to share their rage in a public forum. I'm your host, Mary Abdul-Malik Neal. I'm a musician, community developer, and feminist activist. Join us for each episode as we talk with women about the struggles they face in work and life. We begin this podcast this season chatting with women in the arts. Thanks for tuning in. Tamara Menon moved to Kitchener-Waterloo from the bustling city of Mumbai, India in 2016 as an international student. Prior to her journey in Canada, Tamara sang professionally on stages, TV shows, and private albums. However, she found her calling in teaching and facilitating music lessons for children and youth across Mumbai. To further explore the connection between social justice, community well-being, and music, she pursued her master's degree in community music at Wilfrid Laurier University. During this time, she and a group of friends ran the Yuva Arts Project to bring 8 youth of commercially sexually exploited women from India to KW, where they engaged with newcomer and indigenous youth in a 2-week arts exchange program. Tamara has since graduated from the Masters of Social Work program at the University of Toronto and now works at the Shore Center, a local nonprofit organization focused on sexual health and reproductive health justice in the community. Tamara is trained in Carnatic and Hindustani classical music, as well as a trained dancer in various traditional Indian classical dance forms. In her leisure time, you can find her leading the occasional Zumba class, reading about space, attending community events, or having bubble tea. This is
Screaming
Into the Mic.
Ah!
Hi, Tamara. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Mary.
All right. We're just going to jump into it. And as our listeners know by now, I always bring in a quote from an author. And I'm actually going to start right off with the quote this time. And this time it's a feminist author, Bell Hooks. And she writes in her book, Outlaw Culture, Resisting Representation, "The function of art is to do more than tell it like it is. It's to imagine what is possible." So tell us about your artistic practice and how you've used your music and work in community to imagine what is possible.
Oh dear, what a question.
Mary. We don't start simple here.
I have a few things to say here because, you know, music started as a practice for me personally. Having been brought up as an immigrant. Like, we lived in the UAE. My parents moved there very long time ago. And growing up, that was one way to connect with my roots. So I learned, you know, Carnatic and Hindustani music, and that was my way of, you know, staying rooted in the teachings of my ancestors. So I hold that very closely to my attachment with music. And it's playing a big role right now, presently. So I start with that today. And I would like to say that it's played quite a bit of a role, throughout my artistic practice, even with the work that I've been doing in community, with engaging people in the arts. It's always been about celebrating, you know, different kinds of identity, different kinds of conversations that are usually like in the background, not really highlighted in our, you know, in our society. So I think that's played the biggest role.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing, like what you've done in your artistic practice. I'm going to ask you kind of what your journey was like. I want to go back because I know a lot about you. I want to talk about the Yuva Arts Project.
Like, tell us a little bit about how this plays out
when you go into practice and you engage in community.
Okay. If I'm to trace it, I mean, I'll start with when I was 4 years old and I was told by my dance teacher that I need to go and learn music first. Because it's essential for us to be able to get a sense of rhythm when we are dancing. And so that's where it all started. I started performing at the age of 4.
Wow.
Professionally at the age of 14. Probably was paid the most at that age for performing, believe it or not, which blows my mind. We performed like Bollywood songs. That's, you know, our popular music back home. And then I sort of wanted to meet the expectations of, you know, our society in terms of what I do next after high school. And so I tried to do my degree in microbiology. And I left because I just couldn't stay apart from music.
Mm.
And I felt that that was happening because I'd gone to the U.S. and I could feel that culturally I was starting to feel distant from,
right,
from myself and from my roots. And so I went back to India, and the next, you know, decade was just learning and growing in music and also performing. And, you know, a lot has to say with entertaining people because, you know, people, when they look for entertainment, they're also looking for maybe distraction from their lives, maybe a sense of relaxation or peace, maybe a sense of community. And so obviously I had to speak to those things, right? I had to do my job, right? And that was a wonderful experience until, you know, it started getting very competitive, you know, where I was like trying to make a career out of my musical journey. And I found there to be a lot of exploitation, way too many expectations set on artists like myself, not being paid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, being discriminated for being, you know, a woman, you're treated differently. And so having to navigate that was very difficult. And somehow I just sort of fell into teaching and facilitating music. That just kind of fell on my lap.
Okay.
So this organization called Songbound was just about getting, you know, started. And it was founded by someone from the UK, a French horn player, Joe Walters, who came to India and noticed that music was not really, well, you know, here's another white perspective that, you know, like music was not accessible, like as in learning music or having formal lessons was not accessible. Okay. To children who were underrepresented, you know, who are marginalized in our communities. There is a certain level of truth to it, but also music is just inherently part of our culture. So,
which is very different.
Yeah, it is. And so you don't have to go to a concert to find music. You don't have to go to a club to dance. It just happens all year round. We have festivals and, you know, music and dance are just part of that celebration of life. And so, I mean, that goes to say, you know, I think it was a very important initiative because it brought maybe that sense of like, you know, you also deserve to have music lessons, right? You deserve to have access to that. And so I started to do that work. And through that work, actually, I started to create these relationships with youth in my work where it was, you know, music was not just about learning a song and performing it and building confidence, you know. It was about songwriting, like writing things that were meaningful to them, writing about things that mattered to them.
Self-expression
and also like talking about things that were happening in their community, like one of the places that I used to go to was an NGO or a non-governmental organization called Kanshala, which supports, you know, children from, again, very, I would say, poor communities who are diagnosed with cancer and now need a place just sort of, you know, have be able to go to school while they also access their treatment in the cities. And so I had the privilege of working with these kids, and they are, you know, they're amazing. I mean, some of their stories are like, wow, I have so much to learn from you, right? But they would talk about, you know, farming, because that was, you know, like where most of them were coming from. They were coming from farmlands. You know, their parents were farmers. Talking about what it means to lose somebody in the group to cancer, right? And, you know, some of the other places were like children of construction workers, lots of displacement that is experienced by those children. What does it mean to be, you know, sort of, you know, traveling all the time, living in a mobile home, you know, not seeing your parents all day? So really, like, being able to hear those voices, those stories. And I started to realize that then that, you know, music was playing a different role here. We were talking about social issues. We were talking about, you know, needs not being met. We're talking about these young voices who have so much to say and so much to add to community, but, you know, their voices are drowned in all of the other chaos that the world is in, right? And so I decided that I wanted to learn more about that. And then I found music therapy, right? Yeah. I just did a Google search and I was like, oh, what is this? And I had very little understanding about it. And that's how I landed here in Canada, thinking that that's what I wanted to do. But I also realized that that was probably not what I wanted to do. And I decided to finish my community music degree at Laurier. And that's when I did UVA, UVA Arts. I never wanted to disconnect with the children back home that I worked with, because I felt that they were the ones who showed me the way. They were the ones who added so much more layers to what music meant to me as a person. And so I still want to, and I still keep them in mind when I'm doing my work. So I decided to do UVA, which was a wild idea, which was met with a lot of hesitation and maybe a little bit of,
As all very creative, innovative, and very broad, large thinking ideas end up being.
It was very ambitious, like to bring, you know, 8 children from what is called the red light district, you know, who we call the children of commercially sexually exploited women. There's a lot of stigma, a lot of shame attached with their identity in our culture. And so we had to work with and against those systems in place back home, but also working with the narratives that have been shaped here, right? By this like dominant narrative that we have that, oh, these kids are poor, they're coming to a new place, they're not going to want to leave. Is this even ethical to be doing? So it was needing to maybe bring some awareness, maybe to educate, but that couldn't happen without those kids even landing here, those youth even being able to tell their stories and show people who they are, right? Took us 2 years to do that, Mary. 2 years.
So just so our listeners have an idea. So this was your project for your community music degree. You had to do...
It wasn't for the degree. It was something that I decided to do.
This is just a side thing, but this is lovely. So you decided that you wanted to do this project, and it was connected to your training in community music. You wanted to bring them and have them experience arts.
And that was an idea that was brought about by, you know, meeting people like Isabel Cisterna, like from Neruda Arts, and, you know, Pam Patel from Empty Space. And, you know, there was that organization called Dreamshare Uganda that brought, you know, youth here from Uganda to do these arts exchanges. And so I was like, you know, I actually approached them and I said, you know, why just, you know, youth from Uganda? What about youth from other places? You know, would you be willing to do something like that? And they said, well, if you have the relationship with those youth, then, you know, you could do it potentially. And I thought to myself, can I though? Can I actually do it?
Right.
Right? Because, you know, I've, you know, that's not what I thought. I didn't think that as a musician alone that I could do something like that. Mm. But I wanted to do it so badly. And I wanted for those youth, and I wanted the opportunity for people to also shift that narrative in their head.
Yeah.
Whatever narrative it was in their head about, you know, this not being possible as a project, that it not being worth it. Right. Mm. That, you know, why are we putting so many resources to doing this 2-week project for like 8 kids? Right. Essentially, it's not 8 kids. Because we know that when the youth went back from the arts exchange, that, you know, they were able to pass on those learnings and those experiences with others. But I'm digressing here. But what happened was that they came here for about 2 weeks, and they got to engage with Indigenous youth and new Canadian youth here to do like music, you know, creative like visual arts, movement, theater. They got to do that workshop with you, Mary.
Oh yes, we did. Well, yes, right? We did bring junk music to your project. Absolutely,
which was also so special. You remember the amount of noise and music in that room?
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful, and that's what Yuva was. Yeah,
and then I do want to go back and figure out, like, so what has happened since then, like with these kids, and
well. You know, like I said, there was a lot of hesitation, and I think a lot of fear around, like, what will happen when they go back? Like, will they, you know, regret having gone back to their homes? And I remember the last few days, they were like, we're ready to go back home. We need to see our moms. Like, we need to be, we want to have our dal and chawal, our rice and dal, mm-hmm. right? We want to, we miss that. You know, it's their home and we can't take that away from them, right? So anyway, they went back home. And over the course of time, I've been sort of, you know, occasionally checking in with the social workers there to see how they're doing. I know that most of them are thriving. They are, you know, despite challenges that may have come up during the pandemic and all of that, you know, most of them have completed high school and are now looking into, like, post-secondary education.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to hear that. And also one of the youth who came here, she is now pursuing her degree in music.
Oh.
And, you know, she was the oldest of the group, and, you know, she was very much connected and passionate about music and wanted to make that her path in life. And she's doing it. She is living it right now.
That's so lovely.
Yeah.
See, like, all the battle and everyone saying, what are we doing for just 2 weeks, and see all the outcomes that happened.
Yeah. And I don't want to make it sound like those 2 weeks were what led them to.
No, but it's part of their journey.
It's part of their journey. And I, you know, when I went back home just about a few weeks ago.
Yes.
I had the chance to meet with this wonderful lady now who is pursuing her degree in music. And I asked her, you know, what is it that you took away from that 2 weeks? And she said, you know, musically, I took away that there's no right or wrong.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, there it was, plain and simple. She said that in, you know, just a few words. And I was really taken aback by that, that something so profound could have been, you know, taken in.
And it's so easy to see that because you get to see so many different perspectives and everybody and so many different cultures and so many different contexts, and that everybody could do what is the same, quote unquote, music.
Yeah.
Like the same techniques, the same pitches, the same, but do it very differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have very different, like, products and very different emotions and very different
sound.
Yeah.
Right? Even how a voice sounds, like, mm-hmm. what is music supposed to sound like? What is harmony? Mm-hmm. You know, I've had these questions come up when I was doing my degree at Laurier, right? There have been times when, you know, I thought that, you know, there's, you know, when I've done like songwriting classes or whatever, there's been moments where I've, you know, have felt like, this sounds great. This sounds, you know, nothing is dissonant here in my, when I hear it.
Yeah.
But theoretically, it doesn't make sense in some perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the Western perspective.
Yes.
Of what is, you know, dissonant, you know, what is not attractive to listen to, whereas what is.
Yep.
And so when I hear this young person tell me that she now knows that there's no wrong or right in music, you know, I feel like something has been done here that's right.
Yeah.
Because I wish that I had that insight.
As opposed to being it drilled in your mind that there's certain ways of doing it.
Yeah.
I know. I think I always say that sometimes I'm blessed perhaps to have not been formally trained in music.
Yeah.
Because I did find that when I went to school, when I did my master's degree in community music, there were people who couldn't improvise.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There were people who just couldn't sit down and just be like, we're just going to play. They were like, where's the sheet of music? I was like, no, we're just going to play.
Like,
and then the idea of doing things like rolling dice to figure out chord progression was just beyond.
Oh.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
And that's what I would do in my workshops. And when I started writing music, I remember I would work with some people and they're like, that's not a standard chord progression. I'm like, yep. And I ended up working with like an ethnomusicologist who was like, oh, I'm digging just like going with this.
Mm.
Right?
So isn't that interesting? Because I find that to be the case where there is this, is it avant-garde or, you know, when it's like very different where, you know, there's maybe sounds that are not traditional to put together or whatever it is, right?
Okay.
But that some people have the privilege and that some people, it's okay that some people make those sounds and, you know, put those sounds together. But like, that's only for some people.
It's a privilege.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that, you know, others don't have
mm-hmm.
that. And that's coming from a place of not knowing, you know, what music is.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I found it very interesting. I just find it very interesting when we talk about, because I, like I said, I'm not formally trained. I just kind of go by ear. And you're right. My ear sometimes hears things very differently, but because I haven't put it in a box.
You know, if you learned music from my guru growing up, I want to tell you how mm-hmm. I learned to learn music. So our guru would say, her name is Jyoti. So Jyoti teacher would say, I call her Jyoti teacher. Jyoti teacher would say to me, you know, learn the piece first and then you get the written notation.
Oh. Right?
You don't get, the notation is like a gift at the end.
Interesting.
Or like a certificate that you have learned the piece and now you get to keep it, right?
That
as a memory.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. And you know, again, that notation is just a sketch. It's just a skeleton of what we're learning because mm-hmm. all of those inflections in the voice,
the
that
emotions.
We do, emotions,
yeah,
as well as improv is mm-hmm. Very inherent. It's actually very important in our music.
Mm.
In fact, singing from notation would probably be not respected or maybe frowned upon even.
Interesting.
So, you know, growing up, that was what I learned. So when I hear you say the importance of singing to notation, which I also experienced at Laurier, mm-hmm. when I was doing my degree, I think it's just so interesting how that, you know, what is the right way or what is the wrong way here, right? Like
yeah.
that, it just keeps coming
cultural,
back.
Cultural, like Western, sort of that Western view of how to make music, that conservatory.
My teacher would have been very proud of you. In fact, she would have been like, there's a great student who knows exactly how to learn music.
So interesting. So I was just in the wrong place. That's where you're at. I was just like in the wrong country, in the wrong. No, but I find that I definitely challenge and disrupt a lot of like that colonial way of education. I always tell people when they're bringing me in to do workshops, I'm like, if you're looking for like something that's going to be very polished and ready to perform and like, don't hire me because that's not what's happening here.
Yeah.
This is like, we are going to go in the chaos. We are going to explore. We're going to like play. And at the end, we're going to create something that we all came together to create. And it's not going to sound like anything that's supposed to be on a stage.
Organized chaos.
Yes.
That's the world. I mean, I don't know if I can say that right now in this moment in time. But that's kind of how
the whole world is
operating. The world is operating. Yeah. Organized chaos. Yep.
Sure. I don't know if I would. I think organized is a stretch. But sure.
Yeah, that's why I said it. At this moment in time, it does not feel like it's accurate.
Yeah. And so, okay, this has been really interesting. I want to come back to, because you've come here as an international student to study the arts. How has it been to like integrate in the community? viewers cannot see your face. Like listeners cannot see your face. So,
I flinched there. So the reason why that was my expression is because I don't want to make this. I don't want to generalize this as, you know, every South Asian person's experience of coming here as a musician, but I want to speak to at least my experience. Of it, an honor that it's been really hard to find my place here. You know, I've never felt more distant from my voice and music over the past, you know, few years. The pandemic sort of exacerbated things for me. I think, you know, those years of like, again, you know, when there is a dominant narrative or story being told of, you know, what is music supposed to actually sound like, or what, you know, when you're in university, you know, you have a lot of things to do, right? And you have only so much time and capacity. So you have to, you know, wisely sort of navigate that system and make sure that you're, you know, spending time on things that are valued and important by the system.
Yes.
Right?
The colonial system of education.
So that's what happened during the course of that time, that I had to maybe put like a lot of energy and capacity into doing the things that were expected of me.
Right.
So that I could move forward in my journey here. Right. So I came here to do a bachelor's. If, you know, I have certain limitations as an international student, I can't take time off in between to explore something else. You know, I can only work 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. That used to be the case. I think it's kind of become a little bit flexible right now.
Okay.
So there were so many limitations set on me that, you know, I felt that if there was one thing that felt like it could take a backseat, or I could, you know, push it away, was, you know, maybe singing in my style or like performing or finding avenues for me to like, you know, feel comfortable in my musicality, perform, you know, the way that I would back home. Mm. Right. So that kind of slipped away.
But then maybe lose that gift. Like,
yeah, it's, you know, it's
it
not
doesn't
that
become part of your peers' experience either to have that.
There were some very rare moments where, you know, I found maybe one or two people in the community, I could say, who maybe a professor or maybe a friend who, you know, would actually give me the space to sing my authentic self and support me, rather than, you know, oftentimes what was happening is, here's the box.
Yeah.
And here are all of the things in the box. Now find some space within.
Oh.
Find your place in that box. And so that was really hard, I should say. And it was a natural process of having to put that aside because it wasn't you know, that was not, there was not a lot of importance or value placed on that mm-hmm. by the institution, that I need to keep that as my focus.
Right.
So that sort of shifted naturally. And now I'm starting to revive my relationship with music, right? Music is also part of, you know, my roots, as I said before. It brings up, you know, it's so connected with the heart. And I think during the pandemic, when I was beginning to, I just finished my degree, and I thought, let's get back to singing. And I started to sing, and I felt, you know, that it was really hard to, because it's bringing up all of these emotions for me, being far away from home. It was really hard to feel even a little bit of closeness to home when I knew that home was so far and that it was not possible for me to get home.
Right.
So that caused a little bit of more distance. During the time I tried to do some projects here and there, they were great. I did one with you as
well. Yeah, you sang on one of my songs.
And so those were so important. Like the one that I did with you, the one that I did with Reza, mm-hmm. Who is an Iranian musician in our community. Yazan Pana is his last name. He's also a wonderful musician, and he tries to bring together and honor, so, you know, the diverse voices in our community. And so I had that chance to do that project with him. But that was so important. That was so important to even keep like a sliver of connection at that point in time. And now I'm starting to get back to it very gradually, very slowly.
Yeah.
You know, honor that's important, that I need to place value and importance on it. Even if, you know, the place that I am in is not going to do that for me.
Mm. Right. That's very powerful. I'm so glad to hear that you are coming back to it.
Yes.
I understand entirely. I don't have the same experience. I was born here, but yeah. I was raised in my culture in terms of like the religious context. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, immersed in that music and that tradition. And I've definitely had a lot of space from that, and I'm only just starting to kind of go back and explore sort of reclaiming it for myself in a different way, but explore that. And it's a lot, because there's a lot of emotions that go into this. It's understanding your past and understanding you're a very different person. You can't just go back to that past. You have to reinvent it and reclaim it in ways that make sense to you as you are today.
Very true. Yeah, so much of that is true. And I just wanted to note here, because you said, you know, we change. I've often, you know, felt in recent times that, you know, even though, because I just went back home and I had that space to connect with, you know, my roots. And so that part of you, that part of me which is rooted, I find it to be more still almost. So, you know, even if I've changed so much as a person over time, that there is a part of me that is still and very grounded in those roots. And I've been trying to stay with that peace, which again gets so, you know, lost in all of the noise around us.
And the busyness.
And the busyness of life. Yeah. But now trying to connect that peace, that part of me with my music and really make that connection strong.
Oh,
if that makes sense.
That's so beautiful. I'm so excited to see what that evolves in and what you're kind of developing. I know you're kind of like, this is the beginning stages of the reconnection, and because you've also gone and done another degree and are starting a whole other like part of your journey, right?
Yeah.
So you can talk. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of what you've done post?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll try and be brief. You know, I've done my master's of social work. Again, was inspired by what happened with Yuva and the kind of systems, you know, government systems that we had to, you know, I had to often like deal with, navigate. And I realized that, you know, as I'm able to do this, but I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing. Like, these systems are very foreign to me. And so I felt like I needed some understanding and training on that, as well as language, you know, how we use language in society, you know, talking about our ventures or, you know, what we value. Those kinds of things are important. And unfortunately, we don't teach that.
Nope. Our trauma. Well,
we don't learn that.
Our trauma.
Yeah.
Our...
Yeah. And yeah. So making sense of that, having the language for that. And I feel that Masters of Social Work really helped me leverage that. And then I did want to learn more about, you know, what human trafficking looks like here in the region, because I, you know, worked with kids whose moms were trafficked. And so I wanted to know what that was looking like here. Got to do like my placement at the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region. And now I'm working at a sexual health and reproductive health organization here in the community, Shore Center. And I'm a counselor there. And I meet people from all walks of life every day. I love peopling. I love hearing stories. There is so much resilience. There's so many different kinds of stories in this city. And it really sometimes, again, surprises me, because we don't see that being represented on a day-to-day basis in our community, right? We don't see representation as much, but we do have those voices. They're just like not, the volume's really turned down there.
Those are right? The things we try to hide. We don't have that here. That doesn't happen here. No, I totally understand. And I think it's beautiful, the marriage between your music and your social work, because especially when working in community and, like you said, trying to do these projects, because you're able to offer that sort of wraparound support, right? So you're getting into those conversations you're having with people, like in terms of their experience and how the system is oppressive and their like life, their sort of life trajectories, but you also have the language to be able to support them.
Yeah,
much more.
Yeah, and that was the piece that was missing. And you basically found that piece, because that's what, you know, when I was working with the kids and we would do songwriting, they would bring up all of these things that sometimes they would not even bring up with their social workers, right? Mm. Because we were writing a song, and now we are feeling comfortable to talk about things. You know, music just inherently has that quality to do that.
Yes.
Right, create that space for conversation. And so then it was, you know, what do I do with this? Because then, you know, they would feel really comfortable to talk with me, and they would want to speak with me after, you know, a session or whatever. And I just did not have the skills or the understanding to follow up on that. So that's why I also felt like I needed those counseling skills, which is what I've been working on the past few years now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. That's such a great combination. Also, I think something that people don't think about as like, oh, like the combination of engaging in artistic practice in community and then the resulting like emotions and the things that well up in there. And then how do you then help that? How do you support that work?
Yeah, not just leaving them
just
be, right? Yeah. But again, it's one of those things I sometimes tell people, like, because, you know, mental health services are really hard to find, and access to them is difficult right now.
Yes.
And I often tell people, like, if we found support in our community, if we were able to show up, like, you know, just knew how to show up for each other, we wouldn't need to walk into a room and speak with a counselor, right? Because if we learned how to provide those like spaces where we can talk about things and feel like we're not judged, or we're not, you know,
shut down.
We're not going to be shut down. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. That, you know, there are places where, you know, we can feel like, you know, that power dynamic is somewhat out of balance, right? Being very realistic here. Or that we have the resources, right? If that was the case, then maybe we would, mm-hmm. I'm just thinking here, that we wouldn't need to walk into a counseling session and speak with somebody in secrecy.
Or perhaps if, as a society, we valued a trauma-informed approach to life.
That would be wonderful, right?
We wouldn't need to do this.
And I think that's why, arts is very undermined in our society. And I must say that arts has the capacity to do that. But somehow it is an afterthought, right? It's often like, you know, let's in our education system, it's like, let's get all of the academic part of stuff,
yep.
you know, sorted. And then music will add, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like an afterthought.
It's usually. It's the elective.
It is the elective. Yes, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is the elective.
And that, if that shift in attitude or mentality can change, if we can really honor the arts for what it is, what it has always done for us, mm-hmm. what it has done for our ancestors, what it did for us during the pandemic. Yeah. If we can understand that, if we can honor that, and we stop treating music or like any form of art as a commodity, right? But instead look at it as sustenance to life, sustenance to our humanity, which I feel, let's say, we're really, really need it in this point in time.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we will see those results.
Mm-hmm.
We will see results in our world.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, we are currently in a world that the value system is in the economics and in the capitalistic framework. And we are seeing the results of that. And it's no longer, we don't value the arts and the idea that, like, that expression. Nor do we value open expression anymore, really. So that,
no.
I think that's also, like, to me, that's also the biggest challenge in the arts taking a back seat, is our open expression is now in our silos behind our behind our screens and keyboards, and we don't want to interact with other people, or we forgot how to interact with other people.
Yeah.
Like during the pandemic, we forgot
how to interact with other people. And the arts, that is what we're doing. We are trying to engage. Like, if you're on a stage, you're trying to engage the audience. You're not
absolutely.
The goal is not to just feed them.
Yeah. When we have free music festivals here, when we have free, you know, events happening here for families, there's a reason behind it, mm-hmm. right? It's to bring people together, to make them feel like, you know, there's a sense of belonging, to create spaces that bring comfort. You know, we give meaning to places. Mm-hmm. And so when we bring arts to those places, then our relationship with that place will be different versus, you know, yeah. if there's like, you know, it's just a gray and white building that you see there, right? With like hardly any windows.
Yes. Right. For sure. Absolutely. This has been a wonderful conversation, Tamara. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I wanted to give you space to see if there's anything you wanted to tell our listeners about things that are coming up for you or anything you want to add to this. Yeah.
In terms of, you know, what's coming up, I have no idea.
And, you know, I love it.
I think one of the things that I really want to focus on now on my journey with music forward is not to have those, you know, those dominant narratives telling me what I need to do with my music.
Mm.
Whether it is, you know, you're a singer, you should be doing, you know, events somewhere. There's that pressure. You know, are you doing with your music? I just want it to be a practice that allows me to remain rooted in my humanity, in my roots, before I do anything else with it.
Oh, I love it. Music as personal practice. I like it.
And especially, like, I know that my own well-being and health, and I learned this the hard way, is inherently connected with where I am and, you know, the health of those around me. And I want to ensure that I'm, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm in a secured, well-rooted, grounded way when I do my next project, if that makes sense.
That's lovely. Yes. That makes complete sense.
I do have some thoughts to share around, you know, what people can do to support the artistic community.
I love it.
Please have more funding opportunities. Please have more, you know, scholarships for international students, if possible. You know, that would be great. If you want more diversity, you need to be able to make it accessible for them, right? We need also more funding for our arts organizations. Like, they have been really stretched thin over these past few years. I would say, as well as that shifting of the attitude that I spoke about before, that's so important. You know, if you can even support local artists in your community, knowing that each artist is not just working on their form of art, they're doing all of the admin work. I'm sure you can very much relate to this. They're doing their marketing. They're doing their grant writing. You know, they're doing it all by themselves. And it's a lot of work and a lot to expect from an artist when we only pay them for their performance, right? Like, that's what we end up paying them for. Please support your local artists. You can even donate your time. If you feel like you have some skills in grant writing and you want to support somebody that you really like in your community, that's one way of doing it. You know, attend their events.
And I love that idea of, like, donating your skill set.
And I want to speak to one thing. Mm-hmm. When, you know, recently I volunteered at a music festival, and I went around with these donation, you know, boxes, asking people, you know, even a dollar, mm-hmm. even $2. If you all put in $2 into this, you know, box, this organization can sustain and bring some more, like, programming here, right? And you see all of these hundreds of people really enjoying themselves at this event. And then I need to explain to them why they need to donate a dollar or two. What is in it for me, right? And I wish I could just, you know, tell them, like, well, what are you looking at right now? Yeah. Like, you know, you are in this space right now. Do you know how long it took for this event to come together? Mm-hmm. You know, do you know how long it took for these artists to prepare for the set that you're watching? You know, do you know what it takes for somebody, you know, like the leader of the arts organization to advocate for this programming for you and your family? Somehow I didn't get the space to do that at the event. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that that's another way that you can just put a dollar in a donation box.
Yeah.
But put $10. That would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that whole idea of entitlement, like, it's here, it's free, it's in a public space, I should just be able to access it, or somebody else should pay for it.
Yeah.
And we've talked numerous times in these conversations about the gigging economy that artists have to find themselves in, and there's no living wage opportunity for artists, and that means that it's not sustainable.
Yeah. It is not. We don't have systems that that are based in compassion or empathy. Mm. So if we don't give it to our own communities, we are not taking care of ourselves as a result. So if you care about your own health, the health of your children, do this. Take care of your community. You know, show up. Show up for the arts, because we need it.
Hmm. Oh, definitely. The arts are such an important part of a vibrant community and has always been so overlooked. Well, thank you for those. Thank you for those tips. That's great. We look forward to hearing where your personal journey with your connection with your music takes you.
Thanks, Mary. It was wonderful to have this conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for this conversation. To learn more about how to connect with our guests, as well as resources mentioned during the episode, check out the show notes. If you are enjoying this podcast and are a woman local to the region of Waterloo looking for a safe place to release your anger, check out our Facebook group, Screaming Into the Void Waterloo Region. The link is in the show notes as well. Thank you for joining us for this mini podcast series, Connecting with Women in the Arts. Until next screen.